Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We are glad that you are here. As we begin, listen to the word of the Lord from Hebrews chapter 2. Since the children have flesh and blood, Jesus too shared in their humanity. He had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Now, with the title that I had landed on for this series, naming it Christmas Past, Present, and Future, that has probably called to mind for many of you Charles Dickens' famous A Christmas Carol. And that is not an accident. Now, for those of you who don't know, my super talented actor daughter, Anna, who takes after her super talented actor mother, is in A Christmas Carol as we speak. She is rocking the role of the Ghost of Christmas Past in the Argenta Community Theater production of A Christmas Carol. And where is she? She's sitting in the back. So cue the embarrassing father moment right now. There we go. I think there's one more image we're going to show. Very stunning. She's done a great job. So I'm very proud of her. Now, I'm going to pivot just a minute. I don't want to make this about me, but let's make this about me for just a moment. I don't want to brag, but I too was in a production of A Christmas Carol. It was my sixth grade production at school. It was in the multi-purpose room, and our set of cardboard boxes was stunning. It was riveting. Took you to a whole nother world. And I was a very impressive ghost of Jacob Marley. And I think that's how I performed the character. I was proudly the winner for overacting in a sixth grade drama at my school. So I've lived in this story a little bit, and she's living in that story, and it's one that we as a society visit a lot at this time of year. And in case it's been a little while since you've seen the story, let me remind you just a little bit. And I want to talk about this idea of the present and the ghost of Christmas present. If you've seen the story, you may remember that this ghost isn't as terrifying as some of the others. And the visions that this ghost takes Scrooge on aren't quite as terrifying as some of the others, because he's not taking Scrooge to the past. He's not taking Scrooge to the future. It is, as the name would suggest, he's showing Scrooge the present, what is all around him. The difference is what this ghost does at this time is enables Scrooge to see the world that is going on all around him, but the world that he is missing, to see new people that he overlooks, or from new angles that he doesn't quite see. And so Scrooge sees joyful opportunities that he's missing out on when he's not joining with his nephew and his nephew's family and friends in celebrating Christmas. And he also shows him what's going on in the life of the person that works for him, Bob Cratchit, and the plight that they're living through, including God bless us, everyone, Tiny Tim, and what's going on in their lives. And even though it's difficult at times, this expanded vision of what's going on in the world around him is a gift. And to have eyes widened for us as well, to see parts of the world and perspectives in the world that we sometimes miss, that is a gift to us as well. When we see ourselves more clearly, that's a gift. And when we see the bigger world around us that we can be willfully blind to, that is a gift. It is a gift to see joys in relationships that we're cutting ourselves off from. And it is a gift to see the plight of people around us and opportunities we have to enrich their lives and to enrich our lives when we open ourselves up to greater compassion and empathy. That is a gift also. So we started this morning with well-known verses from Hebrews that celebrate the significance of the incarnation. And the incarnation is this mind-blowing idea that the God who was before all creation, who was the author of all creation, who is through all creation, would willfully, purposefully become a creature, a created one, would take on human form and experience human struggles and temptations, all in an effort to better understand us, to better relate to us, to better minister to us, to better empathize with us. Some of us, over the course of the last 3-4 months, have been reading a book called The Road Back to You. And in it, Susan Stabile tells about a friend of hers named Rebecca, who is a nurse and who works with children with profound visual impairment. And part of her job is to set up support groups for the families, especially for the parents whose kids has just received a diagnosis, and she'll provide guidance for them and help them navigate some of the challenges that they never expected they would have to face. But apart from some of the advice that she gives, one of the most meaningful and impactful things that she does is she will hand parents eyeglasses that correlate to each child's specific disability, and she will invite the parents to put those glasses on. And she describes it almost inevitably when those parents put on these lenses that correlate to how their kids see the world, they will almost inevitably burst into tears and they will say, "I never knew that that's how they see the world. I never knew what it was like to look through their eyes." And that's what Jesus does. Hebrews says that's what Jesus does. He did not remain distant. He came close. He made himself present and touchable and knowable and approachable. He becomes like us to understand how we see the world, to look through the lenses of our struggles and our temptations, our wants and our needs. He becomes like us to better minister to us, to be the great high priest for us. And that empathy empowers his ministry. But the story of the present one, Emmanuel, our God with us, is not just so that he can see like us. Jesus sees through the eyes of humanity, but Jesus never surrenders the eyes of divinity. He never loses the love or the compassion or the mercy or the faithfulness of God. And because of that, Jesus not only sees the world as we see it, as people see it, but Jesus sees people as God sees them. Jesus sees the image of God in everyone, even the people that others have long since stopped seeing that same divine glory. Jesus sees it. He sees the potential. He sees the promise. He sees the possibility. Think of some of the stories we encounter in the gospel. When Jesus meets the Samaritan woman at the well in John 4, Jesus sees a person worthy of the living water of God. Not a despised foreigner, not a degraded woman, not someone denigrated by her past failures or misfortunes. When Jesus sees the widow in Luke 21 give her last couple of pennies into the offering at the temple, he sees an act of breathtaking generosity. When others around her, if they were to see her at all, would have seen someone offering a laughable quantity. When Jesus encounters a man with leprosy in Mark 1, he sees someone that everyone else typically avoids because he's unclean and he's untouchable. And instead, Jesus sees someone who is worthy of touch, who is worthy of embrace, who is worthy of healing, who is worthy of love. When Jesus is hanging next to the criminal on the cross, Jesus sees redemption possibilities when everyone else would have seen a condemned criminal that has nothing to offer and no time to offer it. When Jesus connects with tax collectors like Zacchaeus, whom Jews saw as greedy and cheating and traitors, Jesus draws close. And he sees them as worthy of fellowship, worthy of sharing in a meal. And he sees the possibility for change. He sees the possibility for integrity and generosity. When Jesus sees children, he does not see them the way everyone else around him would see them, including the disciples. Because the disciples saw them in the way that most people in their society saw and treated children at that time. As people who should be seen but not heard, left to the side until they get old enough that they can contribute on their own. But what does Jesus do? He invites them close. And he sees them as worthy of blessing. And he sees them as people who have something to teach the rest of us about faith and hope. When Jesus sees his people, the people of Jerusalem, who have a history of ups and downs, of highs and lows, of faithfulness and a lot of periods of faithlessness, instead of writing them off, what does he do? Do you remember? He weeps over them. They are like sheep without a shepherd, and he weeps over them. They are about to turn their backs on him and demand his execution, and he weeps for them. And he determines to be their shepherd. And to be their shepherd, he becomes the sheep, the sacrificial lamb, the one that shows a new way and makes a new way by laying down his life in the way of love and peace and mercy. This is the amazing gift of Jesus. The present one, Emmanuel, God with us. He understands us because he's experienced what we've experienced. He sees the world as we see it, the struggles and the stresses, the hopes and the hurts. He elevates us because he can see what we don't see. He sees more clearly to see the possibility, to see the promise, to see the potential, to see that we were made in the image of God. God for more than what we settle for so often. But there's one more thing. when we really experience and embody the presence of Christ in our lives, then Jesus compels us to take that Ghost of Christmas Present trip as well. That is, he compels us to open our eyes to the people and places that are going on all around us, but to see them in ways that we are often blind to. Jesus compels us to open our eyes to see the possibilities and the promise and the potential in others around us that we can too quickly write off or turn a blind eye to, or we pigeonhole those people because we've already figured them out. Jesus compels us not just to find comfort in the fact that he sees as we see, and he sees us as we don't even see ourselves, but to open our eyes to see others through his eyes as well. I was reminded of one of those stories recently, although the event took place about a decade ago now. It was a football game in Texas that took place between Grapevine Faith Christian School and Gainesville State School. And everything was upside down about this game. If you're not picking up on it from the name, Gainesville State School is a maximum security correctional facility for adolescents. It's about 75 miles north of Dallas. And the young men who play on the team have to earn the privilege to participate in this outside activity. And they have to do that by demonstrating an impeccable record in behavior and in their efforts of study, because they're all incarcerated. So every game is on the road, as you might imagine. And they don't have a group of fans that travel with them. Many of them have been disowned. Others have just been distanced. It's not that easy to travel with them. Who they do have traveling with them is 12 correctional officers to go with 14 football players. That's their traveling cohort of fans, is 12 correctional officers. And all of the kids are in because they've been convicted of something, drugs or assault or robbery. Now contrast that with Grapevine Faith. Instead of 14 players on their team, Grapevine Faith had 70 players on their team. And 11 coaches, almost the same amount as correctional officers for the other. And they've got the latest equipment, and they've got involved fans, probably occasionally over-involved fans. And as Grapevine Faith was preparing for the game, their coach, Chris Hogan, had an idea. Thought, what if half of our fans went to the other side and cheered for the kids from Gainesville State? And what if we gave them information so they learned their names, had the numbers that went with the names? And what if, well, they sent out an email, said, here's the message I want you to send. We love you. Jesus Christ loves you, intentionally created you, and has a plan for your life. You are just as valuable as any other person on the planet, and we are supporting and affirming the effort you have made by earning the privilege to play. Now, rather than describing what happened, let's watch for just a few minutes when this plan came to fruition.
So for the first time, the always on the road Tornadoes would feel as if they were at home. And as kickoff approached, it was obvious something was different.
It looked like they thought they were at the wrong end of the field because they know they don't have any fans.
And we were just looking. I just looked I just kept doing my plays.
But I seen how they were split up, but I figured they just didn't have enough room on their side.
I want y'all to line up in line. They're making a spirit line. I like, say what, coach? He said, can you repeat that? And he said, they're making a spirit line for y'all to run through. I like, yeah, that's what's up, sir. That's what's up.
When it happened, it was just, it was dynamic. It was one of the most unbelievable things I'd ever seen.
When I ran through this, like, I felt like it was just like some, like, angels was on me. That's all I felt. Because I was just running through it as fast as I can. I just feel the wind rushing my face.
That feeling of being unleashed lasted throughout the game, and so did the cheers.
We had a penalty, like, the third play of the game, and I heard booing behind me. I turned around, and it was the Grapevine fan.
I remember when I was making, like, a play, I made a chocolate, and people yelling my name. I'm like, I don't even know these people.
They were just like ours that night. I can remember rooting for their little quarterback, and I felt like he belonged to me.
Our kids were their kids, and their kids were our kids, and all kids were the same.
It wasn't enough to lead the Tornadoes to victory. As expected, Grapevine Faith won 33-14, and the Tornadoes finished the season 0-9. But it didn't matter, because for the first time in a long time, someone was in their corner, and that alone was worth celebrating.
I was like, hey, y'all, this is going to get close, man. I don't care if we lost tonight, man, because I was feeling good.
I feel like we were losing the Super Bowl championship game or something. Like, we won that. I mean, winning, like, in our heart, spiritual-wise, I mean, we won.
I've been in state championships of different kinds, and nothing was like this, nothing.
Isaiah and the rest of the Tornadoes will never forget the feelings they had on that night. And while it didn't erase the mistakes they've made, it showed 14 teenagers that regardless of the bad things they've done in their past, there was reason to look ahead.
I cried. After the game, I went back to my room, I cried. I think that your family ain't the only ones that love you. God ain't the only one that love you. Other people love you too.
This is what I was hoping and praying would happen. I hope that it gave them hope.
I see world in a different way now. I mean, I'll just see, like, I'm the victim no more. So much love, because, you know, I came from a broken home family. So, I mean, having all that love, it just rose my spirits up.
They got to be kids that night. They got to be a teenager and experience Friday Night Football in Texas.
Oh, and 9 and getting a Gatorade shower after a loss. You can see that after the game, they gathered for a prayer. It was Isaiah, one of the kids from Gainesville State, who surprised everyone and asked if he could pray. And he prayed, Lord, I don't know how this happened, so I don't know how to say thank you, but I never would have known there were so many people in the world that cared about us. So after the game, Gainesville State Tornadoes went back to the bus under guard, 12 correctional officers, and every player was handed a bag with a burger and some fries and a soda and candy and a Bible and a letter from a faith player. And the coach from Gainesville State grabbed the coach from Grapevine Faith, and he said, you never know. You'll never know what your people did for these kids tonight. You'll never, ever know. And as the bus pulled away, all the Gainesville State players were on one side of the bus. Hands and faces looking out the window at these people that they had never met, who saw them in a way that most had stopped seeing them as people worthy of love. Christmas is a time to remember the God who came near, that Christ became the present one, to know what we go through, to experience life as we experience, to see it through our eyes. And Jesus showed us as he was here the ability not just to see through our eyes, but to continue to see through the eyes of God and to see everyone as someone created in the image of God. I hope that brings you comfort and encouragement and reassurance. But I hope it does one more thing. I hope it compels us not just to be receivers of that good news, but to be sharers and people who embody that good news. That we, too, as best we can, start to see others through the eyes of Jesus. We see in people that we often don't see, that because of God, they have potential and promise and purpose. And I pray it changes the way we see people who are in our lives every day. But we've become blind to the glory of God that is in them. I pray that it opens our eyes, that we would not only celebrate and receive the presence of Christ this Christmas, but we would allow Christ to see his presence in the world around us.